Countdown Phoenix, written by Clint Gage and Evan Gausted. Narrated by Evan Gausted with Lux Karpovkin-Raid. "Talk to me about your husband," I say, asking about the one thing I really have no interest in. "But first, your name?"
"Is that part important?"
"Unless you think it's important, I don't know it."
"I don't say my name in some circles because they'll find out who my husband is."
"The same husband you want me to find?"
"That's right."
I can't tell if she's being obtuse or having fun at my expense. Either way, we've reached the end of the charade.
"I'm Elisa Traxel. Perhaps you already know of my husband."
She lets those words hang, setting a trap that I'm not sure I know how to dance around. I've never heard of her husband. Unless I have, but I'm not aware. I hate this. It's one of the things that didn't change after the asteroid was announced. People still want to look like they know things, even when they don't. So I take the gamble and nod, hoping to piece the pieces together before I shove my foot in my mouth. "Traxel? Sure. Rings a lot of bells." Metaphor speaking always sounds smart. "Where'd you see him last?"
"At home, 10 days ago.
She lights up a cigarette as she speaks. She strikes me as the type of girl who never smoked before the countdown and went all in with the end on the horizon.
"He left for work that morning and never came home."
I've got questions. Why'd it take 10 days for Elisa to come see me? Why'd her husband keep working during the countdown? How's she smoking that cigarette without getting lipstick on it? Impressive how you keep your lipstick from smudging on that cig. The first two questions might give away that I don't know who her husband is, so I boldly go with option 3.
"Thanks. Anyway, I'm used to days passing without any contact, but after a week without word, I started getting nervous."
I nod. "It all checks out. Probably."
A werewolf, a vampire, and a fae walk into a bar. Written by Karpovkin-Raid and Evan Gausted. Narrated by Lux Karpovkin-Raid and Evan Gausted.
"What has happened?"
he asks, his eyes burning into my soul with their dark intensity. "She's gone," I say, tears springing up as a wave of emotion threatens to drown me. "Rain is gone." And then Darius is gone. Presumably upstairs to investigate. I don't even know. My stupid human eyes can't track his movements. I cover my face, sobs shaking me, and feel strong arms wrap around me.
"We will find her. Trust us on this,"
Rune says, and his words hold power that seem to calm me despite myself. With a howl, Zev, already back in wolf form, leaps across the bar and crashes out a window. Dude is really going to have to learn how to use doors, but that's a lesson for less urgent times. "Aren't you going to help search?" AJ asks Rune, who is still holding me close, like I might fall apart if he wasn't there to keep me together, and maybe that's not far from the truth.
"I must stay to protect Barney. We do not know what we're dealing with yet, though I have my suspicions."
It's Not the End of the World. Written by Clint Gage and Evan Gausted. Narrated by Evan Gausted with Lux Karpovkin-Raid. Melanie looked back at Annabelle and noticed that she had a few different lines on hold. This struck Melanie as somewhat odd, as no one had called at all over the previous 2 days, and now it looked like Annabelle was slammed. As Melanie headed towards her, hoping to help, Annabelle picked up the handset again.
"St. Jude's, please hold,"
Annabelle said, then pressed a button and put the receiver back in one swift motion, all without looking away from the abyss she was staring into. Melanie was pretty sure she had not heard the phone ring. Maybe it was on silent.
"Does our phone system even do that? Hi, Annabelle. Are you all alone? Hi, Marcy,"
Annabelle answered. She usually knew Melanie's name, but seemed a little off today.
"I came here for a little peace and quiet. Wanted to get away from our new neighbors, but the phone's been really busy." "Oh no, did something happen to your old neighbors?" "No, I guess neighbors isn't the word. They're housemates, new people in our home,"
Annabelle explained, still not blinking or looking at Melanie.
"My high school boyfriend found me about a month ago. He and I ended up leaving for Florida, but then coming back to meet his wife and kids in Nashville. And now we all live together at my house."
Melanie wasn't sure how to respond, so she just nodded. Annabelle must have seen the nod in her periphery because she continued.
"Stanley's fine with it and has started wearing my dresses. He says our kids are fine and that they've been sending letters, but I know they're lost at sea. That boat wasn't made for the ocean." Vampire Girl, written by Karpovkin-Raid. Narrated by Lux Karpovkin-Raid and Evan Gausted. Dean is still holding my hand, and I don't pull away until Asher nudges me.
"Ariana, the Council has chosen Dean, Prince of Lust, to be your first guide in our world. You will spend a month with him, and then move to the next realm with another prince."
I blink, reminding myself who I am and why I'm here. "Of course, it's nice to meet you, Dean. I take a deep breath to steady myself and finally pull my hand away. It still burns with his lips, and I find it very disconcerting. It's not as if Fenn and Asher are slouches. They are prime male specimens in their own right, but I can see why Dean got the title Prince of Lust. A growl diverts Dean's attention from me as Baron approaches us. He nudges against my side and my hand falls on his head. His presence clears my mind, saving me from whatever fog of desire Dean casts by mere proximity.
Actually, that is incorrect,
Fenris says, joining us.
The council chose me as her first escort, so she'll be coming to my realm.
Dean scowls at Fenris.
You relinquished your rights to being first. I believe your exact words were, I'll not be a pawn in this game you are all playing, so sod off and have at her.
Have at her? I ask, fire burning in my stomach. I'm not a thing to be had by any of you. Not by charm, I say, looking at Asher. Or brute force. That was for Fenn. Or by a pretty face. I glare at Dean, who looks as shocked as Fenn did when his wolf snuggled up to me. You lot have got to stop acting like asses and start behaving like reasonably intelligent men, or I have no idea how I'll fulfill my contract of picking any of you.
Well, brother,
Asher says to Fenn through a smirk.
Looks like you have an interesting month ahead of you.